this marks the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War. So there's been Civil War exhibits all over the country at museums and historical societies. Probably about 10 years ago, we began to focus our collecting on the Civil War on the occupation of the city. And so New Orleans' experience during the war was primarily that of occupation, but it really hasn't been written about too much. And so part of our desire in collecting this material is to encourage scholars to look at that time period and really understand the complexities of what was going on. And this exhibit is just an attempt to showcase, to give kind of a profile of New Orleans during the occupation. And so what we've done is present all these multiple perspectives through letters and diaries and images that we're able to find in our collections, and present them in a really compelling way, I think.
And sort of the idea is to draw a picture and illustrate what daily life was like during the occupation.
Yeah, and it was really complex. You know, we have a simplified view of the occupation. We have Benjamin Butler, the Beast, but was he really a beast? And then there are certain parts of the community that really liked him, that thought he was fighting for the right side. He was pretty hardcore when he first came into the city, and he hanged a man, William Mumford, who had torn down with some of his drunken friends the American flag from the U.S. Customs House. Butler was a Union general who first oversaw the occupation. And to make an example of Mumford, he hung him at the Customs House. And part of the exhibit is the actual piece of flag that Mumford tore down from the Customs House, and also a piece of the rope that had hung him.
Let's just take a step back. Let's give the historical context now. The Civil War starts, and the Union realizes that New Orleans is obviously a strategic city to capture. And so they come down, and that's one of the first things they do, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, New Orleans was key to the Union winning the war. Winfield Scott created the battle plan for the Union forces during the Civil War, and he called it the Anaconda Plan, where you would take New Orleans and then you would strangle the Confederacy and not allow trade to go in and out through the river. And so capturing New Orleans was the key thing for the Union Army in the war. But a lot of people felt that the two forts at the mouth of the river, Fort Jackson and Fort St. Philip, were impregnable, that you couldn't get a naval fleet up the river. But they were able to do it. They just bombed the forts and then ran the ships right up through and bypassed them and got to the city.
And even though the Union occupied New Orleans, they didn't, like the North Shore and Baton Rouge and those areas, they really didn't have control over those areas, did they?
No. They wanted the Port of New Orleans primarily, and that was strategic for them. We have an interesting letter in the collection from Adrian Roquette, who was sort of a Daniel Boone character on the North Shore who lived with the Indians and everything. And he got caught in this city when the occupation took place. And so we have a letter by him to Nathaniel Banks, who replaced Butler as the in charge of the Union forces. And he's asking Banks if he could just go home. Like he doesn't care one way or the other about the war. He just wants to go live with the Indians and enjoy the beauty of the North Shore.
Tell us about something that you learned, you know, looking at this that you didn't know. What jumped out for you?
One of the coolest things, my co-curator, Jessica Dorman, and I had the chance to go up to Washington, D.C. to comb through the papers of Benjamin Butler and Nathaniel Banks. And we found some really fascinating things, including the papers of Abraham Lincoln's foot doctor, Isaac Zachary. And he was actually hired by Lincoln to be a spy in New Orleans, where he would just kind of go into bars and mingle with the people. And then he would write down little intelligence briefings about the mood of the people, what they were talking about, how they were feeling. And then he would forward those on to Lincoln so that Lincoln had a good sense of what the people of New Orleans thought.
Was he really his foot doctor, or was that just a cover?
No, he was really a foot doctor. And he was probably a foot doctor when he was here in New Orleans, which probably gave him access to a lot of people that he might not have otherwise had.
So from reading these personal correspondences and things like that, what was the mood of people in New Orleans during the occupation?
Well, it varied from person to person, and it changed from time to time. We have an interesting broadside from issued by the mayor of New Orleans, John Monroe, right after the forts fell. And he was saying the Union fleet is coming up the river. And, of course, it took them quite a while to get up there, almost a week by the time they got to the city. And, of course, panic ensued afterward. They didn't know what was going to happen or if the Union fleet was going to bombard the city. So that was a very, you know, traumatic time. I think you can compare it to post-Katrina New Orleans or something. But then Butler came in and sort of was very heavy-handed and sort of tried to put order to the city. And he was perhaps a little harsh in doing that by a lot of perspectives. And then Banks was sort of more conciliatory. He was the nice guy. He was the good cop. So Butler was the bad cop, and then Banks came in, and he's very conciliatory. He spoke French. He could, you know, talk with the people. And then, you know, a lot of the people who had unionist sympathies in the city wanted Butler to come back. They were saying that Banks was too soft and that, you know, the secessionist, you know, people are getting all the good jobs and, you know, things just aren't fair. So it's never as simple as you think it is in history.
So what time period does this exhibit, roughly, what time period are you covering in this exhibit?
We cover just the period of the actual Civil War, you know, since this exhibit is in commemoration of the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. The occupation actually was maintained until 1877, but that Reconstruction period is so complex and very interesting that I think it's a topic for a whole other exhibit. This just deals with the war years.
So the occupation will basically enforce for over 10 years.
Yeah.
It
was the longest occupation in the South.
The exhibit is called Occupy New Orleans, Voices from the Civil War. It's at the Historic New Orleans Collection on Royal Street. It'll be running through March the 9th. And senior curator and oral historian Mark Cave here to tell us about it. Thank you so much, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Fascinating stuff.
Great.